4000, extension 301. Thank you for listening to KPFT Houston.
Unruffled Beat is Clouds Below Your Knees, a song by Texas native Ray Lynch, signaling that it's Thursday, 10 p.m. and time for So, What's Your Story? Hi, I'm Warren Holloman. During the daylight hours, I'm a family therapist, and you'll find me working at MD Anderson Cancer Center. But on Thursday evenings, I team up with Mary Edgerton, Greg Audell, Hank Rubicek, Nicole Grady, and Alondra Mejia to bring you the only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling. We're right here on listener-sponsored 90.1 KPFT Houston. Tonight, I'm here with our guest storyteller, and I'll introduce him in a moment, but I'm also here with Nicole Grady, our amazing intern who's working the boards. Hi, Nicole. How you doing?
I'm well, Warren. How are you?
I'm great. How's the summer going?
It is hot.
Are you getting ready for another semester?
I am getting ready. Just got my books in yesterday.
Way to go. Well, the reason Nicole and I do this show is that we love stories. We love to tell them. We love to hear other people tell them. I'd also say that Nicole and I believe in stories. We believe that every good story has the power to infuse our lives with meaning and with purpose, with happiness and healing. And we believe that storytelling connects us to our past, and it directs us toward our future. And speaking of connecting us to our past and directing us toward our future, tonight's guest storyteller is Dr. Don Benjamin, who has spent a lifetime studying and writing about the stories of the distant past and reflecting on the meaning they might hold for us today. Don is a professor of Biblical and Near Eastern Studies at Arizona State University. But our listeners might also know him from his former gig at Rice University, where he taught in the Religious Studies Department. Don, welcome back to Houston, and welcome to So What's Your Story?
Thank you. It's good to be here, Warren.
We're delighted you've come back.
Thank you.
Don, you've written a number of books on biblical narrative, several. One is called The Old Testament Story. One is called The Social World of Ancient Israel. Another is Stones and Stories, An Introduction to Archaeology in the Bible. Another, your most recent, I believe, is The Social World of Deuteronomy, with the subtitle, A New Feminist Commentary. And I understand your current project is the Oxford University Press Handbook of Deuteronomy. So I am totally confused. I thought Bible stories were for children. Right?
No, in fact, they're not for children. I always tell parents who want to educate their children in the Bible simply to tell them the Bible story, not to read it to them.
Ah.
Because especially if you don't prepare, you're liable to stumble into Bible stories that are not appropriate for children. So the Bible is an adult book.
Ah.
I used to teach an adult course called The Old Testament for Adults Only.
Parts are rated X. I agree. The Social World of Deuteronomy, A New Feminist Commentary. Once again, I'm confused. What do you mean, a feminist commentary on the Bible?
Well, the Bible is primarily the voice of elite adult males or elite males.
Mm-hmm.
Feminist criticism is interested in reconstructing from these elite male voices what the powerless members of their household, certainly women,
mm-hmm.
but also children, slaves, non-elite males, even livestock and nature,
mm-hmm.
to understand what these elite males thought about these groups that were in their households. And also, feminist criticism is interested by a technique we call reading against the grain. In what was the what reconstructing the life, the daily life of women and children and slaves and outsiders who were part of this larger extended household that made up the households in the Bible?
Wow, it sounds very subversive.
Yeah, it is. It is a subversive technique.
Well, I understand your first story has a feminist angle. It's about your grandmother.
It is.
But it's also about Eve?
Yes.
As in Adam and Eve?
As in all of our grandmothers.
Ah. Well, tell us your story.
My mother's mother lived with our family. She was christened Elizabeth. Her family called her Lily. My family called her Mom. And she lived before there were automobiles and before there were airplanes, but was a very contemporary woman when I was growing up. She was important to me because she was an adult, but was not a parent. And I always say that she kept me from running away from home. So, for example, after supper, Dad would say to me, "Clear the table." And I was the oldest of four, and I'd say, "It's not my turn." And he would say, "I didn't ask whose turn it was. I told you to clear the table." And I was right at the point where I would say, at 10 years old, "I'm out of here." And my grandmother would stand up and she'd say to me, "I'll help." Mm. She was my first storyteller because as we washed dishes, she told me, for example, about growing up left-handed. And I'd said, "Well, Mom, you're right-handed." She said, "Because every day when I got to school, my teacher tied my left hand behind me. Because left-handed people were not allowed." And then she told me when she broke her arm, they didn't have plaster casts or they didn't cast breaks. They taped her hand to her chest, but they left it there so long when they untaped it, it was frozen. And I said, "But how did you fix it?" And she said, she cleaned houses for a living. And so she carried, there wasn't physical therapy, she carried an iron, and in those days, an iron was made out of, it was like a dumbbell, until her arm dropped, and then as she worked out. One time I said, "Mom, what other jobs did you have?" And she says, "I packed crackers." And I didn't know what that meant. I said, "But crackers, we know the saltines, they come in the box, they're in four sleeves." Well, in her day, that box was like a wooden pencil box, and it was returned and refilled from crackers that came loose in a 50-gallon wooden barrel. And this was before Pasteur, so their idea of a clean work environment was to put my grandmother in a cage with her barrel and her boxes and a stool and her lunch, she told me, and crank her off the warehouse floor where she hung like a bird in a cage, filling the boxes with crackers by hand. And I was absolutely touched by this woman's stories because there was never a moment of self-pity. She did all these things because she laid down her life for my mother, for me. And what she modeled for me is what the biblical story of Adam and Eve modeled for the people of antiquity, not for us. Sadly, in our world, we know Eve as a treacherous and immoral woman who seduced Adam and ruined a perfectly good garden story. But in my reading of the story, Eve is intelligent. So when the snake asks her, "What are the food guidelines for the park?" She wasn't even in the story where Yahweh instructs the man about, "You can eat from this tree, but you can't eat from that tree." She's got it. She's moral. She not only knows the rule, don't eat, but like a good rabbi, she builds a fence around it. She says, "Don't touch it." So if you don't touch it, you won't eat it. And finally, she's selfless, because if you're going to get the right reading of a biblical story, you have to know what question it was addressing. It doesn't say, "Well, the audience wants to know." The question in the audience of antiquity, and it's still a question for human beings, is what does it mean to be human? And we all dream of wanting to be individually created by our God and live forever. We don't want to suffer. We're angry that a good God made a world where there's brokenness. In this story, the plea that it makes to its audience is this is not a mistake. As human beings, you are in fact capable of giving each other life and giving your life for another. And any heroic person that you've ever known is a person who lays down his life for another. That's what my grandmother did for my mother, and my mother did for me, and my grandmother did for me, and that's what Eve has done for us all. I always tell my students at the end of this that if you ask a Christian of any tradition, why is Jesus important? The answer is because Jesus died for us and gave his life for us. And I'm waiting to overhear somebody say, well, why is Jesus important to you Christians? And I overhear somebody said, because Jesus did what Eve taught. So maybe I will.
Wonderful. If you're just joining us, this is Warren Holloman, and you're listening to So What's Your Story? I'm here with guest storyteller Dr. Don Benjamin on listener-sponsored, corporate-free, 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. You can find us in Galveston at 89.5 and in Livingston on 90.3. Don, I love that story. I love the way you blended a personal narrative with a biblical narrative. Is that kosher? Can you do that?
You have to do that. In the business of conversion to any of the biblical faiths, as a Jew, as a Christian, as a Muslim, you can tell the story, but that's only step one. You have to be able to partner it with your own experience. Until you have lived the story, that makes you that allows you to fully embrace your tradition.
So we don't tell the story of the Bible heroes sort of to celebrate them, but it's to sort of become them?
Well, you don't tell stories of any kind to recreate the past. Storytelling is not creating a biblical museum or a living history. You tell the story to create a foundation on which you build your life. So you get the point of slavery, gratuitous emancipation, and undeserved blessing. Mm-hmm. That's the plot. Mm-hmm. Then you have to look at your own life, and you have to find the place where you were helpless, you were freed, and you were blessed, and then you've got it.
And then my story is a sacred story.
It is. That's what makes a person of faith. Once your story and the story that you have heard from the Bible are, once you overlay them, mm-hmm. Your story is as inspired as the biblical text.
Wow. This is powerful stuff. Pardon me for being so concrete, but I do have to come back to one concrete detail from your story. This image of your grandmother in a cage above the floor, that sounds bad.
Well, it pointed out to me how much times had changed.
Yeah.
Because we knew about, but as a child, the only story I had, and I never had the courage to ask her, is, what did you do, Mom, when you had to go to the bathroom?
Yeah.
But when you don't know what Pasteur taught us about infection or cleanliness, and I'm thinking, no latex gloves in handling the crackers, and
wow.
That was, but she didn't tell it to be, she wasn't trying to get my pity or
right.
Anybody's pity. This was just the story of her job as a cracker packer.
Wow. Well, I'm looking forward to your next story. But first, if you'll allow us to switch gears for just a moment, I'm going to bring Nicole back in because I want her to tell our audience about our sponsor.
Thanks, Warren. The Houston Storytellers Guild is taking a break for the month of August. But in September, we'll be returning to the regular scheduled meeting time, and that's the fourth Tuesday night of the month from 7 to 8:30 p.m.
Thank you, Nicole. And I understand there's a new location?
That's right. Because of the fire at the Printing Museum, the Guild has moved to the Having Center, 1805 West Alabama, right here in Montrose. For updates, check out their website, www.houstonstorytellers.org.
And for those of you who are not in the know, the Houston Storytellers Guild is one of Houston's many well-kept secrets. It's one of the most active and vital local storytelling organizations in the United States. So if you've lived here a while and haven't realized this gem here in Montrose, check us out.
That's right. And another amazing storytelling venue is, of course, the Houston Moth Story Slams. That's on the second Tuesday night of each month at Warehouse Live. And it's produced by our good friend Elizabeth Sosa Bailey and featuring many of the storytellers and hosts you hear right on the show.
Amazing is a word that describes us too, don't you think?
I agree.
Yeah, as well as everyone out there who follows us, live or online.
And you can check us out on our Facebook page. Friend us, like us, post photos, and just tell us what you're thinking. Ideas for guests, suggestions for other storytelling venues, you know, stuff like that.
Just go to Facebook and type in amazing, and we'll pop up. Is that right?
That is right.
And if that doesn't work for some reason, type in So What's Your Story, and a whole new world will open up for you, including information about next week's show.
You're absolutely right, Warren. Next week, Mary is hosting and, well, inspired by Sirius, the great dog star in the summer sky.
And for whom the quote-unquote dog days of August are aptly named.
Starring Mary Egerton, she will be hosting a four-legged teller in her premiere program next week as two of Houston's great tellers and past guests on So What's Your Story, Chris Gorman and Harwood Taylor. They will be showcasing their signature styles with stories about their canine companions as only they can convey. It's something you don't want to miss, these stellar tellers and Mary's debut. Always great stuff on So What's Your Story, right here only on KPFT Houston Pacifica 90.1 FM.
Thank you, Nicole. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Warren.
Now, back to tonight's guest. Don, I loved your story about your grandmother and everybody's great, 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 great grandmother, Eve. I understand your next story is about your father and, I presume, Adam?
No, Abraham.
Abraham.
Yes.
Close, close. Well, tell us your next story.
My dad, Don Sr., for whom I was named, spent 4 years in the Coast Guard and 33 years in the Army. He was deployed for 10 years in three wars. And like the other men in my family, he wasn't John Wayne or Chuck Norris or Sylvester Stallone. He was a simple patriot who served his country, and he did that with a sense of humility that always struck me. When Don Sr. was stationed in Panama and I was home for a college visit, I became aware he was getting up and leaving the house at 3:30 in the morning. And when I asked Mom why or what he was doing, she told me that his commanding officer wanted to go to the Pentagon, and so he had created this project, and it had been funded and staffed, and my dad had been sent to become his executive officer. And the proposal was to build this relay station that would relay radio signals from South America to North America. And the only problem was that no radio station in South America could had a strong enough signal to reach Panama. And as an executive officer in the Army doesn't have command authority, but a commander must give an order to his executive officer, who then thinks it through with him. What are the consequences? So every time my dad's CO gave him an order, my dad's first consequence was no signal can reach us, which angered his commanding officer, and he attempted to silence my dad by putting my dad on an overweight list, requiring him to come at 4 a.m. and with a sergeant to work out as if he were a recruit.
Wow.
One morning when my dad came back to the house to shower and dress, I confronted him and I said, "Why do you let this guy do that to you?" And he said to me, "I took an oath to obey any order that was legal and moral, not that was logical." And I said, "But your CO is a bad man." And my dad looked at me, and I could tell by the look, it said to me, what I'm going to say is important, so pay attention. And what he said to me was, "If you let bad people make you bad, you're going to live a very unhappy life." That was one of the most important father-son moments in our relationship. And in my life, I've had 6 bosses, 3 from heaven, 3 from hell. And every time I've dealt with the 3 from hell, I could hear my father's voice say, "Don't let bad people make you bad." Now, one of my favorite father-son moments in the Bible is the Abraham-Isaac story, which in Judaism is the binding of Isaac, and in Christianity it's the sacrifice of Isaac. This is in Genesis 22. There are 2 other stories that involve not Isaac but Ishmael in Genesis 16 and 21 and in the Quran. And there's a sad and bad tradition that is standard to this, that you have a God who makes Sarah and Abraham wait, longing for a child into their old age, and then says to them, "If you love me, kill it." My reading of this story is that the story isn't about God, it's about Abraham. He has 3 sons, Gehazi, who is his slave from Damascus. He has Ishmael, who is a biological child with Hagar, and he has Isaac, who is his biological child with Sarah. He comes to a point where he needs to choose which of these 3 very capable men will be his heir, and he can't do it. So he uses a ritual called an ordeal to put the issue back before his divine patron, Yahweh, by putting in 2 stories, or 3 stories, it's Ishmael, in the story that's most famous in Genesis 22, it's Isaac. And what's interesting is Yahweh chooses both Isaac and Ishmael. Ishmael will be the heir of the household of Abraham and Hagar in the Negev, which is in the south of Israel. And Ishmael will gift the household with the bow so that they can survive and become hunters in the desert. Isaac will become the heir of the household of Abraham and Sarah at Moriah, which is Jerusalem in the center of Israel. And Isaac will teach the people to survive by telling stories. This is an ultimate father and son moment. It isn't a moment that creates terror. It's a moment in which Abraham, when he tells the story to his sons and to their sons and to their sons' sons, that says, "You were chosen." It's the same story that adoptive parents tell their children they've adopted when they come home because somebody's bullied them by saying, "Well, you're only adopted." They said, "Biological parents have to take the kids they get. We chose you." And so the story isn't about a vengeful God who makes an unreasonable demand of 2 old people and then should be a model of true faith. It's a story of a father who says to his son, "God chose you and you were blessed." And that was what I learned from the relationship I had with my own father, and what I think is a more helpful way of reading this wonderful story in Genesis 22.
Thank you, Don.
I love that story, too. As we say in Texas, first of all, we'll talk about your father, then let's talk about the father of nations. Your father sounds like the genuine article.
He was. He was the kind of man who shook your hand, and if he gave you that handshake, he carried it out. And I had another thing. My dad wasn't a church-going man, but he was an ethical man. So as an adolescent, the first time somebody in the church-going community to which I belonged scandalized me, I didn't get the damage a lot of young people do, because I thought, well, if there are good people like my dad who don't go to church, there must be bad people who, like the fool who scandalized me, who do. So I understood ethics and attendance were different faith practices.
And he gave you some really good advice. Don't let bad people make you bad.
That's right.
Reminiscent of Michelle Obama in her speech at the Democratic Convention. She said, when others lower the bar, we don't do that. We raise it. I've heard a lot of people comment on how helpful that was for them. So now, Abraham, pardon me for being so dense, but are you saying that we should not be appalled and offended that God asked Abraham to sacrifice his son?
Well, that's the preached tradition. Mm-hmm. That's what we've all heard. That's what we've been taught. And when we come to the text in the Bible, that leaps out to us because we've got a fairly firm commitment that that's what this is about. Mm-hmm. My reading is that this isn't a story about God. This is a story about a father trying to make a decision. Mm-hmm. We should be scandalized to have this model of a God who would tell you to kill your child. Mm-hmm. I mean, the abuse of children is epidemic in our culture. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying it's the result of the preaching, but our experience should say we can't go this way. Mm-hmm. So yes, we should be scandalized by child abuse and that reading of this story. But I'm offering you a reading that says this is a story about a father who wants to say to his son, God chose you for this task. Mm-hmm. And you should be grateful in all that you do to say thank you.
Wow. Could you say just a word about the role that stories played in ancient culture?
Of course. It's part of the Storyteller's Project, as it is part of your program, that stories are not distracting. They're supposed to be good entertainment. Mm-hmm. Like, even people who don't even own a Bible know Jesus' parables, because they're good stories. But stories are not made up. What stories do is to help us process our experience. And their purpose is not to be a kind of documentary about what has happened, although it has to have, you have to remember the parts of what happened that affected you. But you tell the story to figure out, what does it mean for me?
Right.
And so that's where we tell stories.
Wow.
Or why we tell stories.
Don, I've thoroughly enjoyed your stories as well as our conversation. I'm sure our listeners have as well. Thank you for being on the show.
It was my pleasure.
I want to thank Dr. Don Carlos Benjamin for joining us tonight, for sharing from your life and from your scholarship as well. You've spoken to the emotional and spiritual connections between grandparents and parents and children. You've shown that we're still writing and telling sacred stories today through the lives we live and the ways we interpret them. Scooter is next with the inner side to complete the backside of this Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And ease into the weekend right. Keep loving a great story, and we'll keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. Till next week, Nicole, Alondra, Mary, Greg, Hank, and I remind you that it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
Our listeners to power this beacon of freedom. Our recent Summer Sizzle gift drive did not quite provide us with adequate funds to take us into the fall. Thus, the KPFT Back to School Summer Special Mini Marathon, beginning August 30th and lasting 2 or 3 days. This KPFT Mini Marathon has a pledge goal of $40,000. Help KPFT with your tax-deductible gift today. Go to kpft.org and click on the red donate button on the homepage, or drop your gift in the mail to 419 Lovett Boulevard, Houston, Texas 77006. KPFT's Back to School Mini Marathon, coming soon, kpft.org. Thank you. This is KPFT, Houston.